Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
I'm Lisa W. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
How are you guys? Good? I'm so glad you're all here tonight. It's a full house almost. That's awesome. Welcome to Living Sober 2014. I want to thank the steering committee, all of the co-chairs, my advisory board fellows, everybody for making this happen this year and all the other years before this year. And I'm just really happy to be here and see you all. So I have a request. Kenny, can I have a 5 minute? Thank you. Okay. I need something. So, oh, sorry, my phone's ringing. Hold on 1 second. Sorry. This is Lisa W.
Lisa?
Yeah. Oh, Imelda? Yeah.
Hi.
I'm busy. I'm at the Living Sober conference. I'm sharing right now. Tell the truth, bitch. Okay. Okay, honey. I love you. I'll see you at high noon. Okay, bye-bye. So. Okay, in that order. So, I love Living Sober. I've been coming to Living Sober since 1990, I got sober in 94 to qualify. My sobriety date is August 22nd, 1994. And I came to Living Sober that first year, so 1995. And I felt like I had struck gold when I got here. At that time, we were at Bill Graham, many of you remember. And it was an awesome venue. And we had all kinds of incredible workshops. And I was newly sober, newly out in sobriety. That means lesbian. And so it was fantastic to find out. We had this conference that provided for us gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual, you name it. We were able to be here, and I was really, really, really grateful. And what also I loved about Living Sober is that there was a sense of belonging here and a camaraderie, and I began to develop relationships with people here who went to workshop after workshop every year. And sometimes I wouldn't see you all year. Sometimes I would see you at, you know, meetings in the community. But it was really, really lovely to catch up with people here, even if it was just a hello, or how has your year been, or what are you doing now, or how's your program. It was really, really great to be able to catch up. So for that, I've always felt this sense of incredible gratitude for Living Sober to have this connection that we have here, and also this fantastic love. And the conference is not easy to put on, I just want to say, and just from a little experience. And people who have loved Living Sober for all of these years, all of us, and then all of the people who have, you know, really done incredible work behind the scenes to put it on, to arrange the conference, to get the Bill Graham or the hotel, to get the speakers, to get, you know, the banners, to get the cement things that you put the banners in. I mean, all of that stuff takes a lot of effort and a lot of care. And I just want to say out loud that I respect and I'm grateful and I feel a sense of indebtedness to the community at large of Living Sober. So thank you. Thank you, everybody. Because I've been around for a few years, The most important person in the room is what I was told when I was new is the newcomer. So I just wanted to see, do we have any newcomers tonight here in the room? I love you, Carolyn. Welcome. When I was new, I first came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1994, like I said, and I didn't have a problem in the moment that I came in with a sense of powerlessness because I was really, really ready to be here. So I have never looked back. When I came in, I was like this. I was totally out of it. I couldn't hardly walk. I couldn't talk. And I knew I was ready for something different. But I had no idea what it is. And what I want to express to those of you who are new, or even if you're returning or struggling, is that there's hope here. That's what I found. There's hope here. I really want to try not to jump all over the place because I'm nervous, so I'm going to try to stick to a little bit of a chronology to have a little structure. Structure is something I balked at before I got here. I have to have structure now or I can't function. It's unbelievable. And now I'm almost 52 and I have to even have more structure. So I grew up down in Los Altos. I was adopted when I was about 4 months old. My parents my mom was a stay-at-home mom. My dad was climbing the corporate ladder at Hewlett-Packard. And I had a brother who was adopted as well, 2 years younger than me. What I remember about being young in 1962 towards 1970 is that I was a super bright-spirited, happy, very, very sensitive little girl with a curl here. And I have to be honest, since Imelda said to be, and that is that today, almost 20 years later, I'm finding myself returning to that bright, young, bright-spirited, sensitive little girl. And that is what, for me, this journey's been about. there was a lot of incredibly wonderful things about my childhood, and then there were some things that were incredibly traumatic. And most of us, or a lot of us that I am aware of, have had a lot of trauma and injury, and when that trauma and injury happens, as it happened for me, something shifted. I don't know, because I don't so much need to know when it was that I discovered that I had an allergy to alcohol, and that I would become an alcoholic later in my life, you know, cross the line. But what I know is with that sensitivity and with that trauma, that my emotions became very dysregulated. That's what I know. And so that was when I was around 10. And from that time on, I can look back and say that that something shifted and I wanted to start to have an altered sense of reality. And I looked for that. And the first way that I looked for that is in the cookie jar. And I learned how to steal from the cookie jar. And I would stick my hand in when my mom wasn't looking, and I would take two cookies, sometimes three, sometimes four. And I discovered that sugar, for me, was a comfort. And that's sort of how I began my journey with turning to something to make something make me feel better outside of myself. And I felt like it was not that I wanted it. That's true, but it was that I had to have it. I really had to have it to make me survive. And I really feel like I was able to function through middle school and then through high school with those cookies and with that sense of extra something. And when I hit high school, and I was in boarding school my senior year, and I told my friends, I'll never smoke, I'll never do drugs, I'll never be a cheerleader, I'll never, you know, do any of the things that many people do in high school. And I didn't. But what I did do was that I ate, and I ate, and I ate, and I ate. And I started to get really heavy. That's just a part of my story, and how that relates to alcoholism, I'll share it later. But my behavior, but I really realized that I had to be altered to be able to tolerate a lot of things that were going on. We don't know. I don't think we ever know that if we put alcohol in our body, that if we're an alcoholic, that we might develop an allergy to it, that if we put it in our body, that we're going to have a response like someone looks at me the wrong way and I want to kill myself or kill you. Like, that's not something that you would ever read, I mean, until we got here, right, the big book. But that's what happened to me. I said I was never going to drink, smoke. So by the time I got out of high school, I was smoking cigarettes, and I started to have a little bit of beer here and there. And I had tasted my dad's beer when I was young, but it never did anything for me. And suddenly, I couldn't stop. That's what it felt like. Suddenly, I couldn't stop, and I couldn't stop, and I couldn't stop until I did stop, and then I came here. Thank you, God. I didn't mean to become, I didn't mean to not stop drinking. I didn't mean to hurt you. I didn't mean to sleep with your partners or wives or husbands. I didn't mean to steal that. I didn't mean to take advantage of your financial situation. I didn't mean to. I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it, but I did it. And, I couldn't stop. So, one thing I didn't say growing up is that so my parents, and I, you know, have stopped holding them hostage now years ago about the things that I blamed them for. But I held on to those things that I thought that how they wronged me for so long that I didn't know how bad it was hurting me. And I drank, and then I picked up drugs, and of course I was eating all of those things. And until the last probably 10 years, I'd say about 10 years ago, I began to release them in this working of the steps, which we do, from the hostage that I held them in, that it's their fault, that they are, they were abusive or they were this or they were that. And that's not to say that they weren't, that's not to say that things weren't good in many ways in my home. However, what I get and I got from being here and growing up is in these rooms is I have a choice of how I'm going to react, right? We have a choice today. You know, if someone looks at me what I perceive the wrong way, I have a choice whether I'm going to punch them or hurt myself or, you know, maybe just like not take it personally, which would be a concept, you know, a great concept. That being said, you know, things were not easy in my family, and many of you who know me and know me well know my story, and it was not easy, and I used that, I believe, as my story, my drinking, and then I picked up drugs as well, accelerated. And so by the time I was in 1987, fast forward out of high school and beyond, my dad said he couldn't have a lesbian as a daughter, or he would not choose to have a lesbian as a daughter. And he sent that in a letter, and I used that for years. I disconnected my telephone, and I went to the Golden Gate. This is how I reacted. I disconnected my phone. I went to the Golden Gate Bridge, and I, like, was going to jump off the bridge, but I didn't really want to die. I just was so upset. And then I jumped, like, I went down to another level on the bridge. Don't anybody ever do this. And then I was rescued, you know, always rescued. Rescued by these gorgeous women firefighters. Thank God. I went to Mods, which at that time was the lesbian bar. After I, you know, got out of the mental hospital, I went to Mods and had a drink. You know, that was my solution to everything. Today, that's just not my solution. Today, Imelda calls me, or I call Imelda. That's my solution. I had a young childhood, and what I realized in the last, I've been thinking about this a lot recently, is that I'm going to be 20, and I'm like a woman child, you know? I'm a woman, I'm going to be 52, but I'm almost 20, and I'm like a woman child, and when I came in here, I was a little child. Like a little child. And I didn't know how to do anything. And I was ripe to come in here. Sometimes I think, oh, I wish I came in earlier. But, you know, God has a sense of timing. So I knew I was powerless over alcohol, that my life became unmanageable because I was drinking and I was, I had decided that I was very heavy. I was 274 pounds, and, right? And I couldn't get the cat box clean because I was depressed. And so I thought, I think I'm going to have, this was in 1994, I think I'll have some alcohol, and I'll get some of that stuff that makes you not eat called crystal meth. And I'll clean the cat box. And I did. Yep. I cleaned the cat box. I scrubbed the floor, and I didn't eat for 6 months. And I lost about, 50 pounds or so. Yeah. The only problem is that I was drinking and using that around the clock and not sleeping and just, you know, the other thing I was doing in my life was unmanageable is I was calling the police to come over to my house to say, and I would say, there's somebody at my door all the time. And, you know, they'd come over and be like, ma'am, I don't think there's anybody here. I said, I know there's going to be a shooting tonight. You better stay. And, you know, so that's what it was like. I mean, really, and just a few other ways that I can share. I have to tell you really, and I don't know how much time I have because I'm not very.
You're okay.
I'm okay. Okay. So my first. I was depressed for a long time, and I was in and out of institutions, and they became more frequent as I was getting closer to my bottom in my alcoholism. And I found these medical. I requested my medical records after my detox. I went to detox on August 22nd of 1994. I went into detox and I was on tons of pills, benzodiazepines, muscle relaxers that a psychiatrist gave me, and drinking around the clock. And I went into detox. Anyways, I requested these records because I was just curious about what I was like. And it says this. So I got sober on August 22nd. On July 18th, it says, this is from the psychologist because I had to have one. The patient says, the psychologist says, you know, they do these, Miley can help with this better, but they talk about like how you know, this mental health recovery language. Patient presented with elevated depression, admits to suicidal ideation, states she is not committed to remaining sober. She's something about side effects from alcohol and drugs. So that was in July. In August, I was back in there, and it says, and this was when I got sober, it says, I'm scared, and I don't know what to do to help myself. I can't see, and I have trouble walking. Now, that was where I landed. That was about 6 days after I got sober. So I know we don't have many newcomers here, but if you're new and you can't walk and you can't talk and you can't see or you can't function, it's okay. I understand, and most of us do. We were there. So it's hard to remember that person today, but it's important that I remember that person today. What else do I want to say? When I came to AA, I was in Redwood City. We started going to meetings in the detox program, and then I got to come to San Francisco and go into the Baker Place's recovery system, recovery program. And we went to meetings every day. I began to be able to walk and talk better. I believed immediately when I went into detox that not only was my life unmanageable and I was powerless, but that that something greater than myself would restore me to sanity, and it really wasn't me. And that I had some kind of an intervention. And not everybody talks about that here, but I feel like I had the hand of what I call God on me on August 22nd, 1994, because I opened the curtains and I said, good morning, sun. And the sun was shining in a way that I never saw it before. Okay, I was psychotic too, but whatever. But I saw the sun in a way that I had never seen it before. And so that, in that way, I felt like God was talking to me. I started going to meetings through the Baker Places, which I'm so grateful for. I met my first sponsor, who is now my sponsor, Mary R., who I love, 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 love. And I went up to Mary. I think she said, do you have a sponsor? It was a Friday night meeting at St. Mary's, and I said, well, what's that, you know? And she said, well, here, I'll give you my number. And she put her number on a card, and I called her. And do you know that Mary came to the Baker Places every single week where I lived, and we read, this is the third edition, this is the book that I got sober in. Every week for a long time. I didn't know what she was talking about. She just kept saying, you know, read this page, do this, do that, do this homework. And I never was a good student, and I was very unfocused, and I was very like, but, what about this? I need to get a job, but this. She's like, hey, easy does it. You'll get a job. You'll do this. You'll be a functioning member. Why don't you try to walk and talk first? That'd be a good thing, you know? So I did, and we worked that. And you know, I discovered that people here are selfless. I mean, no, we're okay, we're a little self-centered, but we learn how to be selfless and help another alcoholic. So I just, and here's something that we used to read also out of this book called Living Sober. And Charles, I just wanted to see if you could just read this little excerpt for me, because this is what it's about. I felt like when, come here, Charles, please. This is what we discovered, just there to there.
Oy. We discover, but we can hardly dare to believe right at first, that we are not alone. We are not totally unlike everybody after all. The brittle shell of protective and fearful egocentricity we have dwelled in so long is cracked open by the honesty of other recovered alcoholics. We sense, almost before we can articulate it, that we do belong somewhere, and the loneliness starts rapidly leaking away.
Thank you. I love you. Thank you. We, you and I, all of us don't have to do it alone. That's what I got here. And I got that as soon as I came here. And even though I couldn't think, I couldn't function, I couldn't walk and talk, I knew that I belonged and I knew I was home. And I really know that at this Conference of Living Sober as well, because I grew up here in these conference rooms. So I went through, you know, 0 to 5 major detox, really difficult times. Okay, thank you. So many things to discuss. And I had hard times in my recovery ages, and I've heard this, people talk about this, ages 5 to 10, I got to really look at my character difficulties. Defects of character, they call them. I like to say character defects, character liabilities. And one thing I discovered that was really true is that I never really had a sense of self. But what I didn't understand is that I didn't have a sense of self, but all I thought about was me. I couldn't figure that out. So here in these rooms, what I've learned is, and Mary R. says this, if you stick around long enough, you'll meet an interesting person, and that person is you, you know? And so I started looking at all my character difficulties. So one of the things that was happening for me is that I was mean in my relationships. I raged, and those of you who know me very well have experienced this sometimes. And I raged and I couldn't stop. And if you got too close to me, I raged more. But I wanted to be close to you. That's all I wanted, you know? So for me, what I found out is that I had to go to some other programs to deal with something that was... which was in relationship to what I talked about in the beginning, which was my turning to food, which was the flour and sugar for me, which made me absolutely mean and crazy. And, you know, I haven't had that now in years, and I'm not so mean. And I also am willing to be closer to you without defense. So that's something that I learned here. I think we all want to be authentic, or at least I know I do, but I never knew what that meant. And so in the years between 10 and 20, after I got abstinent from flour and sugar, I started working on what does it mean to have not a sense of self. That's, you know, important to be authentic, to grow up here, to work the steps, to look at what we've done wrong, to amend that, continue to do that. But what is a purpose? Like, what is our purpose here? What is my purpose? It comes back to this thing that my sponsor and many sponsors I've had have always said, which is, so you clean your house and your cat box. You trust God, which I do, and you work with others, which I do. And that's really what it's about. And so today, as I said, I'm this woman child. I crossed the line when I was 19 to becoming an alcoholic and came out, started sleeping with women and realized I was a lesbian. My friends were in college. I was in a mental hospital looking out the window going, I wonder when I'm going to get my life together or get a life, basically. I didn't get that till I came here. You guys, the foundation, the steps, the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous helped me build that. And I didn't get to college. I tried to take a few classes, but I kept getting W's and W's and W's and F's. And so recently, I had a conversation. The best thing that's happened to me in the last 8 years is that I've gotten this incredible family, a family I can call my own, which is my partner, Michelle, and my children, Nick and Sarah, my stepchildren, who are the lights of my life and all that goes along with that. And done. And anyways, we had a conversation, and Nick, my son, who's in college now, said, I think you'd feel really great if you went to college. And people know that I've been wanting to go to school. So I've gone back to school. And so this woman child is starting to grow up and learn how to be in life in a different way. And so I just want to close with saying, we can do it. You can do it. We don't have to do it alone anymore. It's not an easy program, but it's a simple program. Don't try the steps by yourself. Clean house, trust God, and help others. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.